Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NYBS Radio Show, home of the New York Bigfoot Society.
What's up, Footer Nation? Gary Hootenhala here, and welcome to another episode of Bigfoot Radio right here from the great state of New York. We just had a couple thunderstorms come through. It's nice and rainy outside, so it's a nice day to kind of be inside and talk all things Bigfoot with you. So I'm super stoked for this show, and welcome. We've got to our season finale. We've officially reached the end of our first season. First off, I just want to thank everybody, the audience, our listeners, our followers, our supporters, all the people that come to our lectures, all the people that listen to me ramble on and on in this radio show, and read a lot of the stuff that we post on Facebook on a daily. We do this for, just for the pure fact that we are here for all the people that have had encounters. We are here to listen. We are here to back you up. We are here to get out into the woods and gather whatever evidence that we can find of the elusive creature known as Sasquatch. And that is our jobs. We do this as a hobby, but it's a professional hobby, and we've been doing it for a very long time. So first off, I just want to thank you all. And here we are on, episode number 10, official number 10, even though we did do another one. So we thank you. Tonight we have an awesome guest on from Southern New York, and he's going to tell his encounter story, which is an awesome story. We have an hour-long show tonight, so this is the longest show that we've had all season, but we have a lot to cover in this, season finale. And once again, I thank you all so much for all the, support that you give us. And it's cool, so thank you. All right, so let's get into the clerical as we always do in the first. We have a lot going on, and because this is our last episode, I won't be with you for the next couple months on here as far as Bigfoot, but we will be having another radio show, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes when we get to that. So what do we have going on? Well, I have three lectures coming up in three different spots in places in the New York State. Right now, I'm putting one together up in the Glens Falls region, the lower Adirondacks. you guys have spoken, I've listened. So, you know, I was able to get a venue, a place where we can sit down and talk all things Bigfoot, Sasquatch, things like that. Talk about evidence, show evidence, talk about encounters, everything. So I'm in the process of putting that together. I put out on the Facebook page that who would be interested in coming out. We got a nice response. So I will be putting up a date and time very soon. So we are good to go with that. So Glens Falls, we are coming up to visit. So just stay tuned to the Facebook page on that. We also will be having another lecture coming up in October out in the Middleburg, Schoharie area out that way. All right. And also we would be having one in Albany, in Clifton Park, the Albany County region. So we will be right in our home base. So we have three lectures coming up. You can come out and hang out with us. You know, life has been good as far as us getting out to talk to everybody, see everybody. You know, a lot of people, you know, wanted us to come out and to do lectures, speak to you, hang out with you, show the evidence that we've gathered from over the years. And it's been a great turnout. Once again, I thank you all for coming. You know, we've gone to kids camps, which was a lot of fun, and those kids were amazing. So, you know, we're getting out into the public and just talking to everybody. All right. So it's been a very busy season. Oh, excuse me, of just that stuff alone. So thank you for that. So those are the three places, Glens Falls, Middleburg, and Clifton Park. We will be doing lectures in a town hall type atmosphere in those areas. So stay tuned to that. I'm super stoked. All right. So good thing is we've been out investigating. We've been doing a lot of work in the field, which is nice. We got a lot of things coming up. We're busy for the next couple weeks. We're going to be, after the radio show, we're going to then be going back out into the woods for the next couple weeks. So, you know, I won't be focusing so much on this, and we'll be back in the woods. So we have a couple different theories that we're working on, and we're going to be trying a brand new method to try to entice some different behavior. I can't really talk about it yet, but guess what? We will talk about it in the next season. The next season, I'll start having my team investigators on, and we'll be talking all things Bigfoot. So I'm super stoked about that. So we're going to be getting that back out into the woods. Now, with that, at our last investigation, we actually were able to catch a tree knock, all right? We split up into two groups. Myself and my tech manager were chilling at base camp, and I was just doing some knocks. I had two other investigators out on the trail, walking the woods. You know, I want them to, you know, stir up anything or see if we're missing something, all right? So they were out doing their thing. We were doing our thing. Myself and Luke, you know, at camp, pounding some trees, you know, trying to get a response. And sure enough, we did get a tree knock response back. That night, we did, you know, a couple of us kept hearing something around camp. When myself and the two other investigators were away and were setting up trail cameras, we did get a radio call from Luke, who was by himself at base camp, that kept hearing something walk along the creek beds and things and right outside of camp. So we were having activity. We came back, you know, debriefed what we were doing. We went back into the woods around camp, and we still had something moving around us. And then next thing you know, later on that night, we started conducting tree knocks, and we did get a response back. And I have the clip for you, and we're going to play that. So the clip I'm going to play is the full clip of the tree knock. It's 1:04. So please turn up your speakers if you haven't already, and let's play this. All right, so it's a minute, 4 seconds. You heard that. I hit the tree twice. There was a nice pause in between that, and we got two knockbacks. About almost like 30 to 40 seconds after I did the knocks. When we put it on isolation, this is what they sound like. So these are the tree knocks that we got in response. All right, I'm going to play them one more time for you. I did amplify them so you can hear them. All right, so like you said, we were having a lot of movement around camp that night. We did think there was something around us. I conducted two tree knocks, and about, you know, like I said, 30 or 40 seconds later, we did receive a knock back, two knocks. If you hear, they were far away. That's why I had to amplify it so you could hear it. But it was right behind our camp. We were hearing all the basically movement and things like that. So we did get a response back. So at the end of the day, that is a win-win for us. They were able to basically, you know, entice a response, and we got the response that we were looking for as far as a two-tree knock response. Nothing else really happened that night. We did set up, you know, cameras and things like that. But, you know, whenever you go into the woods, we don't always get stuff. And that's the thing, is people are like, Gary, where's all the evidence that you get? I only want to see evidence, blah, blah, blah. Well, listen, if I'm a Bigfooter and I go in the woods and I'm able to show you evidence every single time I go into the woods, my credibility has now been flushed down the toilet, because it just doesn't happen that way. The evidence is so far and few in between. It really is. You know, we show footprints, we show tree knocks, we show vocals, we show rock clacking. We're able to show those things, but that evidence has taken years and years to gather. It's not an everyday thing. So for us, if someone has those type of things, more power to them, awesome, high five. Just don't, you know, say it on Facebook and all that stuff, because then why would you tell that there's a creature there every single day? Because guess what? Someone like the government or somebody like that, or forest rangers, would get in. So if people are saying, come on, man, it doesn't happen that much. It just doesn't. I don't always see fisher cats when I'm out in the woods. Bigfoot isn't always in the woods every time you go out into the woods. It just doesn't happen. I'm sorry. It just doesn't happen. So we got a knock response. Cool. Win. So that's good. So we'll be heading back into those areas within the next few weeks to, you know, continue our research. We'll also be heading into a brand new area to start really, you know, basically get the ground down for, you know, what may be in this area and once again, try to back up the witnesses' claims. So we will be moving into a brand new area, and we're super excited about that. But unfortunately, you know, this is also coming into my paranormal season, as most of you know, and if you don't, I also run a paranormal society. I've been doing paranormal work for about 24 years now, and we come into fall, and fall is Halloween and Samhain, and we start getting into the crazy time of year for us when we hold lots of events to bring people ghost hunting and, you know, look for any kind of paranormal activity. So Bigfooting will be coming down a little bit for me, because I have to then come out of Bigfooting and go into the ghost stuff, but I don't, like I said, over and over, I don't mix them. They're two separate entities. So, you know, I'll be doing a lot of that. So, unfortunately, Bigfooting after the next couple of weeks will be slowing down for us until after paranormal season. Then wintertime comes, and then we'll be snowshoeing back in the woods. All right. Dunzo, that's clerical. So, once again, thank you, everybody, so much. And I hope you enjoy the tree knocks. Those are really cool. It's very rare that we pick up these things. We don't constantly pick this stuff up. So when we do, it's my Oprah aha moment. Like, this is so cool. All right, so I'm going to bring our guest on in a second, all right? A little bit, just to introduce him, his name is Joe. He's from down in southern New York, and, you know, his encounter happened down in Delaware County. And I'm going to let him talk and bring him in, and he'll tell you his story. His encounter story is awesome, so we're super stoked to have him. So let's bring him in. Hey, Joe,
you
there?
How you doing, everybody? Yes, sir.
What's going on, Joe? Awesome, awesome. So, yeah, so once again, thank you so much for being on the show. We're super stoked to have you. And, yeah, I'm just going to basically give you the show. And, you know, we got let's see, what do I got? I got 45 minutes to talk, so we're going to let you explain everything, and we'll kind of fill in the gaps.
Okay, sounds good.
All right,
so
all you.
This My encounter occurred in, it was the fall of 2014, but I'll back up probably about a half a year. We started looking for a property in what's upstate to us, downstate to you. I'm in Dutchess County, so Delaware County, and where our encounter happened and where we wound up buying this piece of property is a 15-acre plot, kind of in a real isolated area surrounded by farm and a lot of woods and some state forest and stuff like that. We settled on it. We looked at it in 2013. We drove all over upstate New York looking for a piece of property. We found this piece of property. It looked like a very promising hunting property. And that's why we purchased it. We would purchase this lot for hunting. So we didn't get a lot to do. We didn't do a lot of anything on it except scout it, walk it, check it out, you know, kind of learn the property, where the boundaries were, things like that, after we bought it. But we decided that in the fall, after we closed, we were going to hunt the property right away. It was bow season. It was the last day of September. We went upstate to us, downstate to you, probably a few weeks before hunting season. We set up a couple of tents because we didn't have anything on the property at that time. We had no camper. We had nothing, but we wanted to get out there and check it out. So in southern New York, you don't really leave the house. I'm just going to preface this so you guys understand where our mindset was and why we wound up in a situation without any firearms that we wound up in. So we in southern New York, when you leave down here to go hunting and it's bow season, you take your bow. That's it. There's no reason to take a firearm. You're going to be out. If you encounter a black bear, it's very, very rarely. And if you do, it would be from a great distance, and it probably wouldn't even notice you. So when we were packing to go upstate, nobody bought a firearm. We just had our bows. I had my father, myself, and my two sons. My youngest son was 16. My older son was 21 at the time. So the 2 weeks prior to us going up there, we went up. We had checked it out. We set up tents. There was leaf litter everywhere. It was the fall. We were really excited to have the property and then to go back to camp and hunt it. We were really super excited, the kids especially, my two boys. So we scouted one of my sons, and it's funny because, you know, you hear the term tree knock, and I'll say this about where I was then as far as Sasquatch is concerned. Probably like a lot of people, you hear about it and you know about it, and everybody's seen the videos of Sasquatch walking on a logging road and things like that, and you go, wow, that's really cool. I wonder if it's real, you know? But you never really land on an affirmative or a denial. You know, you're like, it'd be cool if it was real. I wonder if it is. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You don't really have. So my kids are running around. They're banging sticks on trees. Everybody's seen, Finding Bigfoot on TV. So they were sort of replicating what they did on the show. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm doing tree knocks. And then he's banging. I said, well, you'd really jump out of your skin if something actually responded, you know, half-heartedly joking. But anyway, so we messed around. We got the tent set up. We left. We come back. It was probably about a week later. Like I said, it was the end of September. Next day was October 1st. It was bow season. I worked. My older son worked. My youngest son had school. My father's retired, so he was waiting for us. I get out of work. I pick up the boys. I get here. We get the truck packed up. We head to my father's, which is about 45 minutes from me. We get to my dad's house. He loads up his truck. We laugh, we joke, we're giddy, we're going hunting. It's really, everybody's really excited, you know. So we start our journey. It's about 2 hours ride for us. So I would say I got home about 5. We probably left my house about 6. Probably got to him somewhere around 7, 7:30. We left maybe quarter to 8. So we got to the property, and I want to say it's in the neighborhood of about 10 o'clock at night. So, again, you have to drive up a dirt road, and then you have to go out up another kind of washed out rocky road to get to the property. But you could drive up and park right on it, which we did. So this was about 10 p.m. We're not trying to be quiet. We decided we weren't going to make a fire. We had some Coleman lanterns we used for ambient lighting. I put one outside my son's tent and one outside the tent I was staying in. We had, you know, the bed lights on the trucks and things like that, some hand flashlights, nothing crazy. We didn't have any of those real luminescent torch type lights that they have now. We just had like the, you know, the ones you keep in the house for emergency, you know, the incandescent lighting. Didn't think it through really, to be honest with you, in retrospect. But so we had those, and we're kind of making a little bit of a ruckus. It's 10 o'clock at night. We're in the middle of the woods. I mean, literally in the middle of the woods. There's nothing around. There's farms. There's scattered houses. The rest is just mountains and trees. And we're making a little bit of a ruckus. You know, the kids are getting excited. They're throwing their cots in the tent. We're getting ours in. We're getting the stuff unloaded, hunting gear in the tents. We're getting the food secure. And I want to say this probably carried on for about 45 minutes, maybe an hour. We finally start to settle down. And just so you understand how we had the tents oriented, there was probably about, I want to say there's probably 10 feet distance between the two tents, and they were facing each other. So the doors of the tents were directly across from each other, about 10 feet apart, and we were probably maybe 15 feet from the truck. That's how we had the camp set up. I had a Coleman lantern on a tree just outside the tent where my sons were sleeping, and one just outside the tent where we were sleeping. We had them dimmed, just like I said, for ambient lighting in case somebody had to go to the bathroom or we had to get out for some reason. So we settled in. It was probably about 11 o'clock, I want to say maybe quarter after 11 at the latest. Definitely dark, definitely quiet in the woods because we just made, you know, a bunch of noise. So we settled down, and you've been camping. Everybody's uneasy about camping in strange places, and if you're in the woods and, you know, it's unfamiliar, you're kind of, you know, you sleep with one eye open anyway. So we quiet down, the boys stop chattering, we're trying to go to sleep, and we hear in the distance a pack of coyotes. And it sounded, well, coyotes are noisy anyway, but I have to make a guess about how many there were. There had to be at least six. It sounded like yipping and yapping and kind of running through the woods. And they came pretty close. They were sort of skirting where we were, but they weren't stopping. They weren't like nosing around. They were yipping and they were loud. Loud enough for my older son. He kind of, I guess, he got uneasy and he just, you know, he's like, "Dad," I had to tell him. I was like, "You know, we're okay. We're good." And he was like, okay. And they kind of moved down and away, toward the back of the property. And I don't know if they kind of went into stealth mode because they started hunting or if, you know, they just got out of earshot. I mean, I didn't think so because it was kind of an abrupt stop. So I thought maybe they just slipped into stealth mode. They were going to hunt something. But it stopped. All the chattering from the coyotes just stopped. And within a couple of minutes, we started hearing owls hooing. The way that the property is oriented, where we camped was kind of like, and you were able to park, it was kind of a level area. There wasn't a lot of trees there. It was almost like there was some small saplings and things like that, but it must have previously been cleared. So to one side of us, it went up a hill, to sort of the crest of the mountain and then down the other side, kind of leveled off for a little bit and then went down. And then to the other side of us was like a pine grove of trees and it went down toward a stream. So I'm going to reference that. I gave you the bearings just because I have to give it a point of reference. So up on the hill to one side is where we started hearing this owl hooing. And I remember very vividly. Now, you don't know my dad. My dad is a little bit older. He's in his 60s. He's had a stroke. He doesn't communicate well, but he's very, very, very mobile. He still has all his faculties about him. It just affected his speech. So at this time, you know, my dad is the great white hunter. He thinks he's Grizzly Adams. He's hunted as long as I've been alive. And he's the kind of guy, he got in the tent, he stripped down to his underwear. It was like he was home, you know, this is where he belongs. So I'm hearing all these things. I'm like, "Dad, you know, what's that?" And he's like, "Oh, that's an owl." And I remember I remember saying to him, that's a really big owl. Because as that one was hooing down in the pine grove, there was another one that had started. And it was almost like they were kind of, seesawing back and forth with the owl calls. It was a, you know, it sounded like an owl, like a whoo, you know.
Yep.
So, you know, when you're in the woods and you start hearing these random noises and somebody starts feeding you information about what it could be, you whether or not you actually believe it, you convince yourself that that's probably what it is, you know. So I said, okay, you know, sounds like a really big owl, but okay, it's an owl. So we started hearing. Now, I have never heard an actual wood knock prior to this. So when it was happening, I did not recognize it as a wood knock. What I heard was coming from the, because the owl calling stopped and it kind of switched over to this knocking sound that we were hearing. And it was, again, coming from the same locations. There were one down in the pine grove and one up on the hill. And what it sounded like was, if you can envision a wooden baseball bat hitting a baseball, that pop sound that it makes when it hits, it was like that. It was like a very dry, I don't want to say hollow, but like a very, it was a distinct sound. It wasn't like you would envision never hearing a wood knock before. You wouldn't envision it that way. So it never crossed my mind that that's what it could be. So I'm hearing these things, and I'm questioning it. I'm like, okay, there's something going on here that I don't understand. But at the same time, I start to hear whistling. So down in the pine grove, I hear just a quick, sharp like that. And now I actually started to get nervous, and I actually told my father, I said, that's people. You know, you don't expect anything in the woods to be making a whistling sound, you know, knocking and all that kind of stuff. So I actually started to think that there were people in the woods and they were deliberately messing with us. Now, again, I started the story by telling you we didn't bring a firearm. We were going bow hunting, so we bought bows. That's what we had. None of us had the foresight to bring a firearm, thinking we're in a strange area with, you know, who knows what, different, you know, bear or whatever, with the coyotes, obviously. So we didn't have a gun. So I started to get a little nervous because you start to think, okay, well, if people are in the woods and they're messing around by a campsite where people are camping and there's really no one else around, that's silly on their part because they don't know that we don't have guns. They have no idea. So if it's a person, they're either dumb or they have ill intent. So the whistling continues, and where I was sort of solidified that it could have been a person was I started to hear a yell, a very like a ah. It was very short and distinct, and it kept coming from the area of the pine trees. I'll do it one more time. It was just a short, sharp ah, and it sounded human. So I was pretty confident that what was happening was people. So we just kind of, you know, laid there. There's not much I could do, really. We were just listening and kind of waiting on things to sort of unfold. And we started to get a little brazen was we started to hear something, and it got really close to the camp. You could hear every now and again a twig pop or a leaf crack. Again, this was the fall, so there was plenty of leaf litter. I don't think a person could move through that much wooded area with the leaves the way they were and not make a ruckus. But there wasn't a lot of stuff going on, just enough to catch your attention and have you lock in on it. It got to the point where these sounds were kind of in the camp and they were kind of walking around and making enough noise to where I was kind of like, all right, we're going to have to get out of the tent. Let me back up. So at one point, the motion was so close to the back of my tent that I literally was watching the ceiling because I thought whatever was out there was going to push on it. I was actually waiting for the tent to move from something being so close to it. So I yelled over to my older son, and I said, hey, get your flashlight. And I figured at this point that if it's a person or if it's an animal or if it's something, me vocalizing would be enough to make whatever it is aware that I know it's there and hopefully scare it off. So if it's an animal, I'm going to talk, I'm going to make noise, and hopefully it'll scamper off. If it's a person, you know, maybe they'll run, maybe, you know, at least we'll figure out what's going on. So he grabs his light, and again, I tell you, we bought these incandescent lights because we really were not thinking about the pitch blackness of the woods that we were going to be in. And he's shining it. Now, just before I get to that, so the tent that I'm in is a pole tent. It's not like a dome tent. The boys were sleeping in a larger dome tent for four. My father had an old canvas tent with the poles that kind of had like a square body to it, had a pitched roof. It was a pretty sturdy tent and an older style tent. I'm 6 foot tall. I could stand up in this thing without hitting my head on the ceiling. So when I asked my son to shine the light, because I said, there's something standing behind my tent, thinking it would run away or it would make itself known, whatever. I need you to look. So he starts shining the light and he says, no, I don't see anything. I said, no, you got to shine literally right behind the tent. And he says, oh, wait, there's two. And I said, what are you talking about? There's two and they're standing right by your tent. And now he couldn't see any details, but what he described to me, and I wish he were here. He's working, unfortunately. I tried to schedule this so he could be here to tell this part of it. Because his account is pretty hair-raising when I look back. He told me, he said, no, the eyes aren't shiny, but they look red. And now my father, who, again, like I told you, he's Grizzly Adams, he starts rambling off, it's deer. Deer have like a yellow or a greenish eye shine. Sometimes like it may appear white, but never red. It didn't register at the time, and I told you, I said, when you don't know what's going on, typically when somebody throws an answer like that out to you, you're sort of willing to believe it. I was willing to believe it and accept it. Okay, it's definitely deer. Although in my heart of hearts, I kind of knew better. So at this point I said, okay, I have to get out of the tent. My dad, he throws his pants on, he gets his boots on. We had our bows. I didn't bring them out. I left them in the tent. We both had hunting knives and things like that. So I don't know what we were thinking, but we get out of the tents and literally all the noises that were happening just kind of stopped. We got out of the tents. There was nothing behind my tent. There was nothing in the woods that I could see anywhere. And we literally stayed out of the tent probably for about 45 minutes, deliberately trying to make noise to try to scare whatever was going on away, make it stop. So we spent, like I said, about 45 minutes. I'm a reformed smoker. At the time I did smoke. I don't smoke anymore. So I smoked a few cigarettes thinking, you know, if I put the scent of, you know, tobacco in the air, if it's an animal, it's going to be startled. It'll go away. We made noise deliberately. So this went on for about 45 minutes. We decided, okay, we didn't see anything. We don't hear anything. Whatever it is gone. Let's just go back in the tent. So we did that. And the moment we settled in and quieted down, it started up again. We started with the something stalking the camp. It was moving around. You could hear it very clearly. My father, he kept scaring me because he kept jumping up on his cot. And if you've ever been in a tent and you try to shine a light through the tent windows, it's like that mesh material. You get that shine back, creates a glare, and you can't really see. So he was stretching the window as tight as he could to try to get the light to penetrate it to see what was going on out there. But I don't think he was able to see anything. At least he didn't say anything. So that went on most of the night. We're listening. The knocking stopped. The yelling stopped. But now there was just something pacing the camp, and it was there literally. I mean, like I said, we went to bed 11. We probably dealt with most of the things that were happening probably for a solid hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. So I'm thinking when we got out of the tent, it was probably 1 a.m. or so. Stayed out, like I said, probably till about 1:45. We went to bed. This continued probably for another 3 hours. Thinking about it, it's kind of hair-raising because I can't believe we were that close to something potentially dangerous and had no way to defend ourselves, and I had my children with me. But this was just before, I don't know, I don't want to say just before daybreak. It was about 4:45 in the morning when next to my son's tent, which I could see their door from where I was laying. I could look across and see their door. To the right of them going up toward the hill, something just started screaming, this ungodly scream, a scream I've never heard before. It was a very raspy, sort of uneven toned, and it sounded, the only way that I could describe it is it sounded hollow, like if you blow through a conch shell, you know, like in the movies where they're kind of like blowing those shells and it makes like that horn reverberation. There was a lot of that going on, and it was loud and long. It just continued like probably for 10 seconds. That may not seem like a long time to you, but in the woods, when you're hearing it, that's a long time. It stopped. It moved. And I don't know if I was just in shock from what I was hearing or if – and I didn't hear it move, but I did not hear any leaf litter crunching. I didn't hear anything. This thing moved very stealthily across to – next to our tent now, which is only about 10 feet, and it did it again. And then it moved farther back behind us. And it let out another one of these things. It did a total of these yells with pauses 5 times. So next to my son's tent, next to our tent, it moved back behind us, did it again 1 more time, and then farther down, going toward at the back of the property, there's a stone wall that goes over to the other side where the farm is, and that's where it kind of stopped. At that point, you know, I said, what the hell is that? My father, he's still stuck on it. It's an animal. He's going, it's a snort wheeze. It's a snort wheeze. I've heard a snort wheeze from a deer. It's not a buck. Was not a buck. I think he just wanted to believe it was a buck. So he said, at that point, I'm not going to sleep. I'm getting up. I'm going to go make coffee. So he goes out. I hear him messing around by the truck. He's pulling out the little stove, he's getting the coffee out, and he starts brewing coffee. I figure at that point, this had to be about 5 a.m., so at that point, I may as well get up as well. So I got up, I got dressed, I went out, we had coffee, we let the boys sleep a little bit. And at daybreak, we didn't go in the woods while it was dark. At daybreak, we actually went hunting. The two boys went to their stands, I went to mine, my father went to his, and we spent a large part of that morning hunting, and it was uneventful. We didn't see anything, didn't hear any more of what we heard just hours before. We came out, it was probably about 11 a.m., maybe 10:30 a.m. We decided we were going to eat breakfast. We made bacon and eggs. We had breakfast there. We hunted some more in the afternoon, and we were packing it up late afternoon to come back home. And I think my older son, he rode with my father. My youngest son, he rode with me in my truck. So as we're driving, now up there we have no cell service. I'm not dogging Sprint. Well, I use Sprint customers. It's a great service. I still use them. However, if you're out of area, not so good. So there was no way to make any phone calls, no way to use the internet on your smartphone. So on the way home, as soon as we got into an area where we could start kind of using the internet, I said, you know, let's look up what kind of animal calls, because, you know, there's animals upstate, downstate to you, upstate to me, that we don't have down here in southern New York, like fisher cats, for example, that you don't see many of them down this way. They are up north in central New York, and because I don't see them much, I don't know what they sound like. So I thought maybe it could be a fisher cat. Let's listen to them. Which we did. Didn't sound nothing like what we heard. We started comparing notes about all the things that happened, and I think my son had said something, and I said, yeah, and he said he heard huffing by his tent. He heard like a outside his tent, he was telling me. I didn't hear that, but he was saying he heard it, and he said it was like a heavy breathing, like a and he said he heard it a few times. And as he was telling me that, I said, yeah, and did you hear that knocking? And I think as soon as I said the words, we both kind of had that epiphany, like, holy cow, Like there was knocking. Did we hear tree knocking? And then we started both going kind of crazy, thinking, you know, maybe we had an encounter, you know. And it was one of those surreal moments where you're like, no, it couldn't be. And you're like, wow, but it really happened. It was real, you know. So anyway, long story short, we're scouring the internet for all these different animal noises, different things that could fit, make the sound that we had heard. Nothing was fitting. So we get back to my dad's house. It's late in the evening now. It's probably 8:30 at night. I'm sitting on his couch, and he's in the kitchen. The boys are in the kitchen with him, and they're talking. And I'm in the living room, and I'm looking through the internet. And I kind of gave up at this point about trying to find a specific animal that could make a noise like that. So I typed in animal screams in Google. And I kind of just let it go, and I hit videos. And one of the very first one that came up, I don't, you know, if you guys have been on the internet and you look at these different things, you find all kinds of cool stuff. But the very first one that came up was I think it was labeled 100 Bigfoot Nights Terrifying Screams, and it was called the Bigfoot Tantrum or something. But the moment that I started to play it, my father in the kitchen heard it, and he turns and goes, "That's it. That's it. What is that?" And I showed him, and he was kind of like, you know, he kind of gave me like a chuckle, like a, you know, half-hearted, like, yeah, I believe it, but I don't believe it kind of thing. And my two boys, honestly, they were sort of, they kind of turned white. My youngest son actually started crying because I think it all hit him at once that we more than likely had a Sasquatch encounter. But if you have an opportunity, type in Google Sasquatch tantrum, and that noise that person recorded, this is exactly, it could have been the same animal on or same creature on a different night. It just, in the recording, it's not as long as what we heard, but it is the exact tone, the same pitch, the same thing. It's definitely from a creature very similar to what must have been in our camp. So unfortunately, I didn't get a look at it, and or fortunately, I don't know. But my son, who did, he saw was the eyes, and he described them as like he said it looked like sick. He used the term sick to describe it, because the color was something he couldn't really put his finger on. He said it was like an orangish yellow, maybe even a red. So. That's pretty much it for our encounter.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing story just in general. And like you say, like, you know, there's so many encounter stories that you hear. Like you say, the eyes are red or orange, and, you know, with the, you know, tapiums and things like that, and the way that, you know, we look at them, and, you know, the lights shine. It's you hear it over and over again, and it's just like another, you know, it's just validating what all these other people are witnessing, and you witnessed the same thing, but at a very high level. Like, you had them come right into your camp. You know,
yeah, I mean, it was. So I'll tell you, like, the term, and just for listeners to and for yourself to understand where my mindset was, it's, you kind of go into, I don't want to say play dead, but when you don't know what you're dealing with, and you start, your mind starts looking for rational reasons, what things could be, and you start trying to put different sounds that you're hearing in different boxes. And you can convince yourself of a lot of things, and you may be in danger, and you may actually not realize how much danger you're in, you know. Yep. I'll tell you, like, so we made a decision that we were not ever camping on the property again, not in tents. So we, my father went and he bought a 30-foot camper, and we put it up on the property. And I think I sent you the pictures. I hope you had a look at them, an opportunity to look at
them.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, we set this camper up, and we had gone up again to hunt, and the boys had come up, and I had gone up with my father a couple of days prior. We had no issues, no other, you know, noises or anything like that. But we were running a generator now. You know, we kept the generator running. We had power in the camper. We had running water. I mean, you know, it was because it had a water storage tank. We were kind of like living large in the woods. So We stayed a couple days and then we had gone back. But my dad, like I said, he's retired. So he had gone up during the week. I think he was unhappy with the way that the camper was initially set up. He's kind of like got OCD when it comes to like level and all that kind of stuff. I think he went up to just mess around with it. But he had gone up, and when he did, he took some pictures of the tree that was immediately outside the camper. And I want to say this is a solid 20 feet in the air. I've seen bear scrapes. I've seen deer scrapes. I've seen a bunch of different markings on trees. Animals are not 20 feet tall and typically don't climb 20 feet in the air to mark the territory. 20 feet up in this tree, the bark is just peeled like a banana down the entire length of the tree. I think he understood what that meant. I think I understood what that meant. I think it was a sign, something marking its territory, and it didn't like where the camper was. Maybe it didn't even like us being there. But we got photos of that, and I shared them with Gary. And, that's it. It was a pretty intense night, and I'm glad nobody was hurt. But it did cement or answer some questions, at least in my mind, about the existence of certain things in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, in those photos, I mean, I did look at them, and you can see, like, right above the camper. And as for all of our Footer Nation, they know when you hear about tree snaps and tree breaks going down a trail, and it's always, about basically, 14, 15 feet up, and they're just snapped, and one snapped, and one snapped. Where this one was, like you say, they got right into that tree, they clawed it, they peeled it back, and it was above the camper itself, from where they started. So are they marking their territory, or they're kind of that's kind of where it would probably lay in that category. You're strangers. It's a very quiet area that you're in, other than the couple of locals, and they're checking you out coming in, and the experience that you had was a really intense experience. I couldn't even, you would play dead. It's a flight or fright syndrome. Like your brain is going so fast, you can't even comprehend it.
Yeah. And the thing for me was my dad is, he thinks he thinks he's Grizzly Adams, but he does have a disability. My two sons were there. When I had all these things, like I said, I wasn't sure what we were dealing with. At one point I thought it was people. My mind changed real quick when this thing started screaming, but I wasn't sure what we were dealing with. And in that situation, some people would say, well, why didn't you leave? I can't answer the question. I really don't know. I mean, I don't think my father would have left, and how am I going to say, I'm taking my boys, I'm going to leave you here. My father, yep. He was trying to fit these things into the category of animals. So clearly he was there for the night. He wasn't going to leave with me. So I had to ride this thing out. I had to stay awake and I had to stay alert. My sons were there. My dad was there. And I just did my best to not provoke anything and just listen and kind of try to figure out what was happening. And that's kind of why we stayed. And it's kind of like, when it's happening, you're like, oh my God, I'm just going to lay here until I have to do something,
Yeah. Until it goes away and this isn't happening right now, and we hear the same thing about, ghosts when we do ghost research, and it's like, people, they have paranormal stuff happening around them and they just lay in bed, like in fear, like they can't move. They're paralyzed. Basically their brain paralyzes them. Like, this needs to stop, and I can't even imagine now we're dealing with, I take the whole, wild human type theory, and you're dealing with a living, breathing thing, and you're in the woods, and you're in a place that you've never been before, really, and now you just think you're having a nice little camp out, and then it turns into, you could be snapped in half in about 2 seconds,
Absolutely, and I actually thought, like I said, at one point, it was so close to the tent, I could hear the leaves and the twigs kind of snapping very, very softly right, the tent wall is very thin. So literally yeah. Right above my head, it was right there.
Yeah.
It prompted me to speak, to try to startle it. And it whatever it was, it kept its composure. It didn't run. Maybe it just stayed there. And my son hit it with the light. It with the light. And by the time he took the light off it and my father got his pants and shoes on and we got out of the tent, it hit itself. Because there was nothing either, you know? It was just crazy.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought up the coyotes because, once again, like, there's so many theories based on Bigfoots and coyotes. I know we talked a little bit about it on the phone, but, a lot of times they think that the Bigfoots follow the coyotes because it would almost make sense because they would be scavengers. They're both scavengers. And, you know, the minute that a coyote kills something, then the coyotes all go off like a bomb in the woods. It's crazy. I mean, people that have heard coyotes, you know what they sound like. And then when a bunch of them start yipping, it's like, it's scary, especially when you're in, like, way out in the woods and you're far from your car or civilization and you start hearing them go off and they're close to you, you just want to kind of get the hell out of there really quick. And then next thing, but it would make sense that, you know, if there was a Squatch in the area for an easy meal, just like any, you know, apex predator would do, great white sharks, lions, things like that, they would just come in and just take it. And even coyotes and coy dogs, because, you know, they were in constant battle with each other also, and bears.
Right.
So it would make sense to me, you know, and the minute everything, you know, they're always so noisy and then they go dead silence. And that, you know, once again, for the people that go out into the woods, you know, like we do and everybody else, when you're out hiking or just out in the woods in general hunting, you know, I'm a bow hunter myself, and it's really freaky quiet. Like, it's, you can drop a rock on the ground and nothing. It's just like so quiet. That eerie quiet of the woods definitely automatically tells our spidey senses, I like to call them, that there's something wrong. Like, we understand as humans, you know, we're in tune with our environment. We understand those things. You know, they say it's, you know, the sixth sense, things like that. But think about it. Like, when you're in the woods, you're so quiet, you know something is just not right. You know, and even when it goes deathly quiet like that and then stuff starts happening and your brain tries to start processing it, we just have that gut feeling like, what is going on right now? A lot of times we just don't want to admit it to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what we were feeling, I think. Me especially. You know something is wrong. Something isn't right, but you can't. And again, like I said, prior to this, everybody has heard of Bigfoot, you know, you heard the stories, but you don't really, like I said, you don't really have a position, I don't think. Maybe you do or you think you do, but that did not come to mind when we were going through this, not until the next day when we were going home and we were talking about what happened and we started, you know, we said, oh, what was that knocking sound? And I think, like I said, when we said knock out loud, we both kind of were like, what? Wait a minute. You know, we started backpedaling. And, you know, now, I mean, like I said, I wasn't sure where I stood with the whole Bigfoot phenomena, but I can tell you right now, you couldn't convince me otherwise that we did not have a Sasquatch encounter right here in New York. It blows my mind. I know you say Southern New York, but to me, that's 2 hours northwest. It's sort of heading over toward southern part of Central New York in Delaware County where this happened. You know, you always hear the Pacific Northwest. You know, that's kind of like the hot spot. But here in New York, they're here in New York. They are here.
Yeah, and it's awesome. Like, once again, like, you know, we say, like, say you say north, we say south, which is great. It's always, you know, where we're from. But the Catskills, once again, that's at the foothills of the Catskills. And it's all we hear. So we hear more stories come out of the Catskills, Dutchess County, those areas down there, Schoharie County. There's so many encounters just in that area. And it gets people jazzed because a lot of people have those encounters. And as I always bring up, you know, as an avid hiker and mountaineer and things like that, when we're out in the woods and we're down in the Catskills are very technical to hike. They are not easy. The peaks aren't as big. You're only around, like, you know, upper 3,000s to 4,000, not like the Adirondack High peaks that we're pushing upper 4s to 5s that we hike. But I can tell you from personal experience that every time I go down the Catskills, and even though it's only a 3,200, 3,300, you know, for hike, oh my god, man, it's like you're rock scrambling. It's technical. You're in the forest. When you look at, you know, mountain lions, and we just had our show about mountain lions, it's perfect. You know, it's perfect mountain lion habit. It's same thing with Squatches. They would move right through those areas and those rocky areas, and there's not as many. It's funny because whenever you look at the hiking pages, more people are up in the Adirondacks than they are in the Catskills. A lot of people seem to stay away from those areas as far as like popularity. So, you know, it's a lot quieter down there. It's a lot quieter. But we hear so many, like, encounters from that area. And then you're just, once again, backing up that southern New York, southern central New York, coming into, you know, even the Pennsylvania border into New York. It's very squatchy. And there's a lot of, you know, activity that happens in these areas because it's all farm fields. Like, once you get out of the Adirondacks, you come into farms and rolling hills and things like that. And they can just move so easy.
Yeah.
You know, once you get up into the Adirondacks,
yeah.
The Adirondacks is thicker. A lot of the places that we find the squatches in the Adirondacks, it's not the high peaks. It's not those areas. As I always say, if you're going to go, for all the guests out there, if you're going to go look for a squatch and you're going to do research, don't go high. Stay low. Stay near the water. Stay low. They have no reason to go way up in the mountains. They have no reason. They expend too much energy going that way. They're going to go into the areas that are like the lowlands, the wetlands, the plains, the pines, the farm fields, along the farm, you know, right along the farm field and woodlines, right where the deer lay. You want to follow those areas. So same thing when they talk about Whitehall, New York. Whitehall, New York isn't mountainous. It's not a big mountain there. It's coming next in between mountains. It's a flatland. That's where these creatures, you know, they travel. So, you know, your encounter, like I say, you're not deep in the mountains whatsoever, but you're in a spot that's very secluded, you know, and you were, as I like to say, you're a new bait to the area. They really wanted, they really gave you a show, basically, it seems like.
Yeah, they sure did.
You
know,
I thought
maybe because we recently acquired it, the people that owned it before us, I guess they used it for the same purpose. It was a hunting property, but they had never gone there. They were actually the owners, previous owners were from Long Island. So they would travel. That's like a 4-hour drive for them. And I guess maybe it got too much. And they decided they were going to sell it. Or maybe I think the father who used the property might've passed and the daughter was trying to sell it. But, either way, they saw new blood and they wanted to check it out.
Exactly. I mean, as we say, the universe was on your side that day, you know,
I agree.
You know, you got that once in a lifetime experience that, you know, so many people, you know, want to have, but in the same sense, it's such a scary experience and it could be a dangerous experience. You know, once again, Bigfooting is, we're out there provoking things, you know, even though we're out there researching indirectly, even though we may not mean to do it, we could provoke something because we don't really understand what they are, what they're doing. We're mimicking things that they do, which we're to get responses, but we don't even know what we're mimicking. We don't understand. We're not studying them in a habitat, so we don't understand what all these sounds, yelling, screaming, wood knocks, you know, all this stuff, what it even means. So we just kind of put it logically into animal type behaviors, you know, because that's the only way we can really
think about it. They mimic perfectly. They mimic these animal calls perfectly. They do. I mean,
exactly.
I don't know what the initial yelling I heard, the sharp ah kind of yell, what that was about, but it sounded very human. It sounded almost identical to the way I'm doing it. It was just a sharp ah. You know, and it was only coming from the one side, not both. I don't know. Definitely some sort of communication, I think. But
yeah, most definitely. Well, Joe, we're almost out of time, and that was a great story, and I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing it. You know, being brave enough to share it with the community, because so many people have had these witness type things, and you know, once again, it's another person validating what their encounters also. And as a researcher, you're validating a lot of things that we pick up when we're out in the woods. It makes our database even bigger. So we thank you so much for coming on, man.
No, thank you for having me and for giving me the forum and the opportunity, and I appreciate it very, very much.
Oh, of course, man. Anytime. And you have any last words for Footer Nation?
No, I mean, just be safe. If you decide you want to try to have an encounter, just do it. You know, be safe. Do it during the day. Be prepared. Okay. You know, have the right lighting. Have a way to defend yourself if you need to. I'm not saying that you should go out, you know, wreaking havoc in the woods, but make sure you can protect yourself and be safe.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. And we'll be back in touch soon, man.
Definitely. Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a good night. You too, man. Bye. Footer Nation, I mean, that encounter was amazing. Like, that's as a person that loves Bigfoot and studies Bigfoot, and even the people that watch the TV shows that always come to me and be like, you know, I really wish I could have an encounter. Like, what kind of encounter would you want to have? That is the kind of encounter that you want to have. That encounter would instill the fear of God in you. It's like, just imagine you're out camping, having a good time, not thinking about anything. You're in your tent, and next thing you know, something comes right behind your tent and starts screaming, like just straight screaming. And you have, you know, what are you going to think? What are you going to do? I mean, that is the encounter that, you know, that's what like horror movies are made out of. So, you know, he was safe. Thank God. Nothing bad happened. But we always have to err on the side of safety. We don't still know what we're dealing with. We don't know what these creatures can and will do, you know, and a lot of people, we just don't know. So always err on the side of safety, you know. And as far as, you know, firearms, he brought firearms. We are no kill proponents, you know, so, you know, we don't do that stuff either. But, you know, the season finale is over. Thank you, Footer Nation, for a great year. We will see you coming up in November. As always, keep it squatchy. Deuces.
Thank you for listening to the NYBS radio show. Tune in next time as we continue our search for Bigfoot right here in the great state of New York. Until next time, friends. Keep it squatchy, and we'll see you out on the trail.